Blog Talk Radio.
Beauty Shop for the Soul is a magnificent transformation to restore, cleanse, and tap into the essence of who you truly are. Beauty Shop for the Soul gives you the experience of a new makeover from inside out. Beauty Shop for the Soul was a universal gift to be birthed into the world to host Joanne Buckner. Joanne received this incredible gift through a meditation to share with others to awaken the soul. Beauty Shop for the Soul is a true magical process of the divine being you truly are. Now sit back, relax, and let Beauty Shop for the Soul take you on a new, exciting journey with host Joanne Buckner.
Welcome to this journey of the soul. I'm Joanne Buckner, your tour guide today and every Sunday at 5 p.m. And for those of you who may be tuning in for the first time to Beauty Shop for the Soul, let me just give you a thumbnail sketch of what it is. It's a program of personal, professional, and or spiritual transformation. And all transformation is not about acquiring anything. It's about letting go of everything, anything and everything that is up to this very moment blocked, hindered, or delayed the of your true essence and magnificence, just the way you were created to be and just the way you were not. It's all good. And so in Beauty Shop for the Soul, just as in the traditional beauty shop, you get to do an assessment of your head, i.e. your thinking processes for each of us, for unique, individualized expression of infinite intelligence. And since none of us are infinite, we have this potential that is limitless and the possibility that is unending to be all that we could ever hope or imagine. In fact, beyond our wildest imagination, we have that potential and possibility. As the Master Teacher said, anything that I can do, you can do, and even greater. And so there's so much more than whatever successes, whatever out pictures in your life at this time, and I'm sure some of you have some phenomenal lives. But sit back and relax and let go and allow the universe to show you how much more grand and great can be the manifestation in your life. As you do an assessment, looking at the unique individualized way that you process this infinite information, for there's only one mind throughout the entire universe. It's everywhere present, in and through and around all things at all times. It is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive and available. Available to you and I and all of us 24/7. But of course, just like when you get new furniture in your home, what do you do with the old furniture? Often you have to discard it. You have to clear the path for something new. Well, the same thing happens on this level of this transformation about which I'm speaking. Many times we've been hung up in that expression and thought it was true. I'm only human. Well, it's true. You are human. We are. But you're so much more than that. And in Beauty Shop for the Soul, we get to see just how much more you can be than what you've ever imagined. So it requires an assessment and then a purification, just like the traditional beauty shop where it's called shampooing. Well, cleansing, purifying, shampooing, it's all the same. And then, of course, conditioning. For in the very beginning, as you were created in the image and likeness of the Creator with nothing missing, nothing broken, nothing left out, then all you ever need to know, say, do, or be is already known and said and done. It already is in the mind of the universe. And regardless of what you may call this presence and power, we recognize and honor the fact that it is beyond description, and it is called by many names by many people around the world. Bond to your command, not demand, but your command. When we are able to command, it means that there's something that we have recognized, or perhaps sometimes we haven't recognized, but we've tuned in and tapped into it. However, if that's the way you access it, by seeming accident, and there are none, then when something happens and you want to consciously tap in and tune in to this creative energy, because you can't ever, never not create. You're always creating either the desired or the undesired. So as you look in the harvest of your life, in the garden of your life, as you begin to harvest, what are you harvesting? And so today I want to talk to you a little bit about just what are you married to? And notice I didn't say who, I said what. What are you married to? You know, in order, you know, marriage is basically a ceremonial ritual, but it is a commitment that we make between ourselves and something else. And so what I'm asking about the what is, what thoughts do you spend the bulk of your time with? What ideas, what beliefs, what behaviors are you perpetuating? Because what is that is directing your thoughts, your ideas, and your beliefs, that's what you're married to. And, of course, if there's a who in your life that you're married to, then the what is going to impact greatly upon the who. And the same thing happens with your spouse or significant other, that whatever it is that they may be married to. In fact, I had a book years ago written by a medical doctor, and the title was Who's the Matter with You? And in this case, it's the reverse. This doctor said that when a patient came in for any medical consultation, her first question used to be, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? But over long periods of time, she came to discover repeatedly it never was a what. There was always a who, which means to say that we are allowing something outside of ourselves dictate how we see ourselves in the world. And so that's the what. And so we're dealing with the what now. What is, before I get into that, I want to just say thank you to my friend, Teresa. Teresa, thank you for the wonderful sharing of a prayer time, because I want you to know that I woke up this morning and just as your prayer declared and decreed, there was something flowing on the inside of me. Now, it wasn't new information, but it was something that fell into place with the things that were already going on. It made me think about Clarissa Pinkola Estes, and I don't know if you, any of you out there, I'm sure that some of you probably have heard of her. She's the one that had the best-selling book, Women Who Run with the Wolves. And according to Dr. Estes, who is a psychotherapist, she says that wolves, coyotes, bears, wild fish, and women, same reputation. And she says that, you know, through a psychic archaeological dig, we can, and I'm putting this in my words, dig into our own soul and revitalize the souls of women. It helps us to recover our instinctive nature, which is the same nature as the wolves and the bears and the wild fishes. It's very, very common in healthy wolves and healthy women. Each of them not only have playful spirits and endurance, they have strength, a strong instinctive nature, and in each case, they both have been hounded and harassed and considered overly aggressive and often treated as property. So, Teresa, there's a story that Clarissa Pinkola Estes tells about an old lady who collected bones, and every day she would walk through the mountains and through the desert places, looking for hidden bones, uncovering, and she would crawl around and uncover the sand and the dirt and et cetera. And as she found the bones, her sole work was to collect these bones and of different species, but particularly that of the wolf in the riverbed looking for these bones, she would then take them back to her cave and assemble the entire skeleton. And as she assembled it, she would sing over the bones. And when at last that last bone was in place, she sat by the fire and raised her arms, and she would begin then to sing over the bones. Everything was in place. And eventually, as she continued to sing, the bones would begin to move, and parts of the body would begin to flesh out. Flesh, F-L-E-S-H out. And then the body became, the creature became furry, and the old lady sang some more, and the tail of the wolf would curl up and become shaggy and strong. And her voice would deepen, and the earth shook. And as she continued to sing, the wolf jumped up and ran away, and it was seen as it was running, transforming into a laughing woman who runs free off into the horizon. Well, this woman has gotten in touch with her instinctive nature, and so that's what's required of us. All the bones, the members of our body and being must fit in place. As I live in Africa, one of the stories that I heard was about the Sankofa bird. And it's a similar message in that story. The Sankofa bird flies from one branch of a tree to another, but as it lands on each branch, it turns around and looks back at the branch that it came from to see what was missing, and then goes back to collect the missing pieces before it can move forward. And so we too, as women, instinctive women, it is our nature to be so. And so as we begin to do this psychic archaeological dig, we get to discover the members of ourselves. And as we put them together, then we become whole. And so we're talking about today how to become whole. And it's an opportunity for each of us to look for the missing pieces. And so what are you married to is the question. Not who, but what are you married to? What thoughts consume your time? What ideas and what beliefs and what behaviors are directing your path? And so I want to share a story that has been circulating on the Internet for some time. I don't know who the author is. I've never seen it. But before I get into that story, I'm sure many of you have heard about it's an old Indian proverb about the Indian chief says, on the inside of each of us are two wolves. One is evil, one is good. The one that is called evil, it is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. And the good one, the so-called good one, it is joy, peace, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. And so as the old chief spoke to the young man, and the young man said, well, which one of the two wolves wins? And the elder said, the one you fed the most. So we can become aware. If you think about the ones that were, the characteristics that were listed as evil, what is evil itself? But you turn it around and it's L-I-V-E, which is live, spelled backwards. And so it's a way of just living backwards, out of us. And if you recall some of the words for the one that is called good, it is your true nature, the joy, the love, the peace, and all the aspects that are infinite, eternal, and changeless. So where is your focus of attention? Who are you married to? Who and what did you bring to the marriage? Because the what often turns out to be greater than the who. And so the story that's been circulating on the Internet for some time is about a man who carries his wife every day, and he tells the story as he carried her from the bedroom to the door each morning as a part of an agreement. So the story goes that when this man got home, as his wife served dinner, he held her hand and said, "I've got something to tell you." And so the wife sat down, and quietly she ate. But he observed the hurt in her eyes, and suddenly he didn't know how to tell her what he had to say, what he was really thinking. And with some hesitation, he said, "I want a divorce." And she didn't seem to be annoyed by the words, but instead she asked him, "Why? Why?" And he avoided her, he said. And this made her angry. She threw away the chopsticks and shouted at him, "You are not a man." And that night they didn't talk to each other because she was weeping. And he knew she wanted to find out what had happened to the marriage, but he could hardly give her a satisfactory answer. He had lost his heart to a lovely woman, so he called. And this woman and he worked at the same place and had developed feelings for each other. And he didn't love his wife anymore. He only pitied her. So with a deep sense of guilt, he drafted a divorce agreement and stated that she could have the house and a large percentage of his company and the car. But when his wife read it, she looked over it and then tore it into pieces. This woman had spent 10 years of her life with him, and yet she had become a stranger. He felt sorry for her wasted time, her resources, her energy, but he couldn't take back what he had said because he loved the woman with whom he worked and had fallen in love with. And finally, his wife began to sob, which was exactly what he expected expected her to do. The idea of a divorce had obsessed him for weeks, and it seemed to become now more firm and more clear. The more he saw her cry and weep, the more he was determined to have this divorce. But in the morning, his wife presented him with divorce conditions. She didn't want anything from him. She wanted a month's notice before the divorce. She requested that for that 1 month that they both struggled to live as normal a life as possible. Her reasons were simple. They had a young son, and his exams in a month's time, she didn't want to disrupt with any indication of a broken marriage for his parents, and he agreed on that. But there was one more condition that she had on this. The wife requested that every day for the month's duration that he, the husband, carried her out of the bedroom to the front door each morning. Of course, he thought she was going crazy. Strange request. And when he told his newly intended, about his current wife's divorce condition, she just laughed out loud and thought it was absurd. And she remarked, no matter what trick she tries, she has to face the divorce. So his wife and he hadn't had any body contact since the divorce intention was explicitly expressed. But he stuck to the agreement, and he carried her out on the first day, and they both appeared a bit clumsy. But the son was thrilled, and he clapped his hands, saying, "Oh, Baba, Baba is holding Mama in his arms." He was so happy. And his words brought to his dad a sense of pain. From the bedroom to the sitting room to the door, he walked over 10 meters with her in his arms. His wife had closed her eyes and said softly, "Don't tell our son about the divorce." And so he nodded, feeling somewhat upset. Excuse me. He put her down outside the door, and she went to wait for the bus to work. And then he drove to the office. On the next day, both of them acted more easily now. She leaned back on his chest, and he could smell the fragrance on her blouse, and he realized that he hadn't looked at his wife carefully for a long time. He realized that as he looked at her, she's not young anymore. There were fine wrinkles on her face, and her hair was growing, and the marriage, it seemed, had taken its toll on her. And for a minute, he contemplated what might he have done to her. On the fourth day, when he lifted her up, he felt a sense of intimacy returning. This was the woman who had given 10 years of her life to him. And on the fifth and sixth day, he realized that was now growing again. snooty and minute about this, but it became easier to carry her as the month slipped by. Every day, perhaps, he thought, this carrying her back and forth was making him stronger. And, of course, the son came in at that moment and said, Dad, it's time to carry Mom out. Now his wife was choosing what to wear. She tried on quite a few dresses but could not find a suitable one. All of her dresses had grown. Suddenly he realized that his wife had grown slimmer and thin. That was the reason why he could carry her more easily. And suddenly it hit him. She had buried so much pain and bitterness in her heart. Subconsciously he reached out and touched her head. And she hugged him and held him tightly. But he turned his face away, afraid that he might change his mind at the last minute. But he held her in his arms anyway, walking from the bedroom to the sitting room to the hallway. Her hand surrounded his neck, gently and softly and naturally. He held her body tightly. It was just like their wedding day. But her much lighter weight made him feel sad. He didn't know exactly why. And on the last day, when he held her in his arms, he could hardly move a step. The son had already left the school, but he held his wife tightly and he said, I hadn't noticed that our life lacked such intimacy. So then the husband drove to the office and jumped out of the plane without locking the door. He was afraid any delay would make him change his mind. Quickly, he walked up the stairs, and his newly intended opened the door, but he said to her before she could speak, I do not want a divorce anymore. She looked at him amazed and astonished, and then touched his forehead. Do you have a fever, she said. But he told her no, that he would not divorce his wife. His marriage was boring, probably because she and he had not valued the details of their lives, not because they didn't love each other anymore. Now he realized that since he had carried her and her to the home on the wedding day, that he is supposed to hold her until death do they part. But his newly intended seemed to suddenly wake up. He gave a loud slap across his face and slammed the door then, and his face then burst into tears. But he just walked downstairs and drove away. And at the floral shop on the way home, he ordered a bouquet of flowers for his wife. The sales girl asked him what to write on the card. He smiled and she said, I'll carry you out every morning until death do us part. The small details of our lives are what really matters, he thought, in a relationship. It's not the mansion, car, it's not the property, the bank balance, or the bank balance that matters. These create an environment conducive for happiness, but cannot give happiness in themselves. So find time to be with your spouse, he was thinking, and do these little things that build intimacy. And so this is one of the versions of this story, but the version that I first read, when this husband got home, he could hardly wait to go upstairs and carry this bouquet of roses and informed his wife that he no longer wanted a divorce, that he realized that he had never stopped loving her, and he realized that she had never stopped loving him. Bedroom, and he found his wife on the bed, dead. Dead. Unbeknownst to him, his wife had had cancer and had been struggling with that for some time, but she didn't want him to be disturbed, nor did she want any sad memories for her son watching his mother become progressively ill. And so this is one of these profound stories. What are you married to? What ideas, beliefs, behaviors, what are you married to, and how does it impact upon who you're married to? I can think about my own situation, as I recently was informed about my first marriage, the person that I was married to many, many years ago, in fact, decades ago now. And I also said after that marriage was terminated that I was going to write a book called I Used to Be a Good Girl, because my perception of good and bad, just like in the Wolf story, there's a list of things that in my mind, not it with anyone, no one ever said that it should be, but I kind of knew what I thought good was and what I thought bad was. And so my spouse drank, smoked, gambled, ran around, and did not go to church, even though he had been raised in church. And I didn't do any of those things. I did not drink. I did not smoke. I did not gamble. I did not run around. And I went to church every Sunday. Naturally, I was a good girl, and he was, of course, the bad boy. But perception is everything. And we now know, even today, that there's literally a filter over the brain for perception. Here we transform the perception. It becomes a law of our lives. And so as I saw it at that young age, it appeared that we were opposites. But what was I looking at? What I was looking at was external to me. And, of course, external to the man that I was married to. But we're so much more than what we can see, taste, touch, smell, or feel. In other words, the five senses. We are phenomenal spiritual beings. We have this ability to tune in and tap into an intelligence that is everywhere present, that permeates everything throughout the universe. And so while I was not perpetuating the same kind of activities and behaviors, I did have the way that I dealt with them. If you go to the sacred text, it will tell you, judge not righteous judgment. I was, in retrospect, self-righteous. I looked back and I could see even a pattern that I never recognized during the years that we were married. Whenever he drank, smoked, and ran around, any of these things that I felt offended me, then the way that I treated him, I won't go into those details, but let's just say they were less than admirable. And I justified them because of his behavior. All of this is external, externally driven. Because as long as we are looking outside of ourselves, we do not what? Look inside. And everything begins and ends on the inside of us. But no one had groomed either of us, as is true with most young married couples, about the evolution of the soul, about, you know, we have the physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual aspects of our being. And so it's a cross-transaction when we try to evaluate behaviors, because it's something behind the behavior that's greater than the behavior itself. For example, people say sometimes that someone did such and such because they were drug addicted, because they were alcoholic, because whatever the because is, but actually that is a result of something. Alcoholism is, drug addiction is, any addiction is. And they now know that anger itself is an addiction. That when we experience anger repeatedly over and over and over and over and over, it actually sets up a chemical reaction in the body, and our body then begins to call for this chemical of anger. And so, you know, there's something that happens, and there's a release of toxin, and there's cell receptor sites that lock onto the cells every time we become angry. And so as this happens repeatedly, the body is not able to respond. If it was every blue moon, we are equipped to release that through the normal processes of liquid or solid elimination as well as through the pores of our skin. But if it's every day and frequently throughout the day, as it is in the modern times in which we live, then we end up having the impact of that. And it's not because we are using drugs. It's what has been beneath all of that. And so, you know, there's another expression that says, when you underestimate yourself, the world will underestimate what you do. And when the world underestimates what you do, you will undervalue yourself and what you do. That's not exactly verbatim, but you get the picture about it. There's so much that we inherit without even having realized it because it's given to us at such a young age. And so it becomes then ultimately our responsibility to do an assessment from time to time of our life experience. It's a book by Florence Shorewolf Shinn called The Game of Life and How to Play It. Wow. Did you know you were playing a game? You may not think so, but ultimately we're all playing a game and we don't know what the rules are. And as long as we don't know what the rules are, then how do we know how to play the game effectively? We don't. And by the way, I want to invite anybody who wants to share or ask a question about a relationship, because it's not just about a marriage. Yeah, so remember, you can be married to a thought. You can be married to an idea. And these thoughts and beliefs and ideas and actions, they affect us on our job. They affect us in our relationships. They affect us in our health. They affect us, you know, with our finances. Every aspect of our being, we can begin to look at what are we married to. And how do you know? You know by what is out picturing in your life. If you're always having a lot of more months at the end of your money, then there are some issues around finances. If you're always having to go to the doctor, and doctors certainly serve a wonderful purpose, so it's nothing against doctors, but as the scripture says, physician, heal thyself. As we begin to become aware of what's going on the inside of us, and then take responsibility, as we tune in and tap in to that sacred place and space in us, this is what Beauty Shop for the Soul is all about. And in that recognition, it's not sufficient to say, I know a lot of people who often say, I know that, I know that, I know that. Repeatedly, they will tell you that they know that. But repeatedly, if you observe their lives, you won't see a lot of that out-picturing or being manifested in their lives. And by the way, there was an opportunity for the listeners last week to participate in a forgiveness for the week. And so I'd like to invite you, if you did that and you got some insight into whatever it is, then call me. I mean, press one is what I want to say, and share that. But to go back to this experience, I don't want to leave it hanging, where I was sharing the experience of my first marriage. What I realized when I recently was informed that my former husband had passed away, of course, I was surprised, the energy that I could feel. And, of course, my choice, you could say, of therapy is to write. And what I notice is, as I write, and probably you can have a similar experience, the more you write, you begin to get a sense of a difference in perception than when you started out. I remember the first time that before I ever met the man that I later married, I was in high school. I was a senior, and in the afternoon, I had a history class. And on this particular occasion, the windows were open. It was a warm, sunshiny day. And the history department was on the second floor in the high school, and above us on the third floor was the music department. And so all of a sudden, we heard this beautiful, lilting, melodious tenor voice drifting in the window. And this had never happened before, and everybody in the room turned to in the direction of the window, wondering, you could see the expression on their face, who is that? And how is that? Because we had never heard such a thing. Well, we didn't have to wait too long, that is in terms of days, because the very next day we had an assembly. And during this assembly, the choir sang. And this same beautiful, melodious voice began now to sing a solo. And so, of course, it was easy to recognize that this is the same voice that had drifted in the window in the history room the day before. And so at that time, I had no idea. This person, the music director of the school, said that this young man had a voice that comes along like once in a millennium. That's 1,000 years. He had that kind of voice in it. And in fact, he used to instruct him not to stand near the microphone. He had that kind of capacity to even project his voice. His favorite singer at the time was Mario Lanza. Well, by now you probably have imagined that I'm talking about the man that I later married. And what I didn't know, and just before I get to that part, a few weeks later I happened to visit a friend, and it turned out that this singer was there. The person that I visited was apparently a mutual friend for both of us. And so after the introductions and a brief stay there, I left. And to my surprise, when I left, this singer followed me. And that was the beginning of a courtship, you could say. He ended up being my prom date. A little more than a year later, after graduating from high school, I married him. Or we married each other. And it would be a couple of years later before he said to me that he had actually seen me before he met me, but he had not mentioned it in all the time prior to then. I was at the time a cheerleader in high school, and we had a phenomenal basketball team. We ended up being the state champ for the state that we lived in. And it was the first time in the history of the state tournament that a school from the capital city, which we lived in, won the tournament. And very agile and very limber, et cetera. And so my husband said to me that when I jump up in the air, high in the air, and touch my toes with my hands, that he turned to his brother, whom he was there at the game with, and said, "That's the woman that I'm going to marry." So unbeknownst to me, he had seen me. He had made a decision that he would marry me, but he never told me that until after we were married. And then to flash or skip forward to the recent information that I received that he had passed, and I reflected on those days, and I realized that I had never said to him how I had heard his voice and thought it was a beautiful, lilting, melodious voice. And so instead, what I did was zoom in on what I was married to, criticism, judgment, etc., which will every time pull us out of alignment with the love, joy, and peace, and all of those things that the old Indian spoke to the young boy about. Envy, sorrow, grief, etc. I'm not saying all those were mine, but any one of those will pull you out of alignment with a flow of light. How did I asked myself, never mention to him what I had thought about him? How had I never encouraged him to use his talent, skill, and ability? But instead, I just had a different approach and thought it justifiable by the actions and behaviors that he perpetuated in. And so by my participating at that level, I was also indulging in that. Now, there were other things, wonderful things that he did do, and I knew that, and I saw that, and I accepted that, and I thought that was exactly the way that it was supposed to be. So when we get to do this psychic archaeological dig right into our soul, we get to see what we've been married to. And if it's been such a situation as I described, you might want to consider divorcing yourself from the behavior and not the person, from the behavior. I think that if all of us were trained not just in how to be, let me just say this way. If we were trained on how to be in a relationship with ourselves, then we could be in a relationship with anybody, anytime, any place, and anywhere. But if we don't have it, it doesn't we don't have the opportunity to pass it on. I grew up in a household where accolades were not given. No one ever said you did well. And so even though I was very active and accomplished a lot of things in high school, and as we had this phenomenal team, and I was captain of the cheerleaders, and I was in the newspaper, and I was on television way back then, because the team was so phenomenal, there was a lot of publicity, and we played our regular season games, the high school team, at a Butler University that held 16,000 people at a regular season game. And no one, out of seven of us, I was the only one whose family, as far as I knew, was not showing up at the game. No one, they saw the newspaper, they heard the news, but no one ever said anything to me. And so it was, I suppose, as I look back, difficult for me to offer something that I myself had not received. In other words, it wasn't consciously. So these are the kind of things that in Beauty Shop for the Soul, you get to see, what are you married to and how are you handling that? And how can you do some marital counseling, not about the other person, but about to what you're married to? And as we do this, then we can begin a purification process. And all that we do in this purification is simply to just be still and know that there is this presence and power in the universe, because most of the time our conflict, our confusion, our frustration is a result of us thinking that we have to do things all by ourselves. And that's not true. Of course, what happens, because you adopt that position, it does actually become manifested in your life, because you've been endowed with this ability to tune in and tap into limitless potential and infinite possibility, and information just seems to come from nowhere. You couldn't make it happen. You can only allow this to be revealed. Because what is, you know, some people have been called lucky because they do things so well, but the word luck itself is an acronym for, it's spelled L-U-C-K, living under correct knowledge, who you really are, and that there is this presence and this power in the universe that's greater than you are, that you can use it. And when we apply the knowledge that we have of who we are with whose we are, then it becomes a spontaneous demonstration of spiritual law. And as we have these demonstrations, then it becomes simpler and easier for us to simply get our, as Emerson said, bloated nothingness out of the way and allow the divine circuit to work. And this is where Beauty Shop for the Soul comes in. We can help you do this. We can facilitate a process of assessing the way you look at things, and when you change the way you look at things, the things you change, and when you change those things, things begin to happen internally. It started internally, and it always goes back to that place on the inside of you. And so I thought about marriage vows as I was reflecting upon this relationship of yesteryear and many other things that have occurred over the years. Now, there are no accidents, by the way, and this is not to blame or shame anyone or anything. It is the recognition that, as Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, said, Our parents are the experts in the lessons that we came to learn in this lifetime. And as we apply these lessons, in the same way that if you wanted to be a doctor, you'd have to go to a medical school. You couldn't go to a school of an architectural design school and become a medical doctor. You'd have to be in the place where the curriculum is congruent with the thing that you came to learn. And so when we have these experiences, as I had, of being in a house where there were no accolades given, how you knew you had done well was that there was no punishment for what you did. And so by osmosis, in a way, you got to know that. but there's something resonating in your body because your soul is not being nurtured. Your spirit is not being energized and invigorated like the woman who runs with the wolf. When she went in search of the wolf, who is basically, as I said earlier, has been linked with the wild woman and the wild wolf and the wild coyote. They have an instinctual nature, but it gets covered up by these things. And so we can see the lessons that we came to learn by what is being perpetuated in our lives. What is being perpetuated in your life? What are you seeing happen over and over and over, even though you may change from one relationship to another, which means that you're now engaged with someone, I don't mean to marry, I mean interacting with someone with a different name and maybe a different face and body build, but the experience is exactly the same. Who then is a common denominator? You, me, all of us. And so as I began to look back, to go back to that relationship again, years before this experience that I'm referring to as of this week, I saw a pattern. And that's one of the clues that that or an indicator of your particular relationship. And what I saw was when I was married at that time and there was something that I considered undesirable that happened, and I went into my mode of my MO, my modus operandi or method of operating, I would assume an attitude. Of course, I didn't call it an attitude at that time. And the amazing thing was that my husband would be very quiet and very silent and probably was praying that I would come out of the mood, which I did eventually. And what I saw in retrospect, probably a decade later, I was even divorced by then, was that those moods lasted for basically 2 weeks. And near the end of that two-week time, the energy began to lift. As Ernest Holmes, the founder of religious science, said, we're all like radio broadcast stations. Every thought has an energy vibration. Every word is a container for power. And it can only lock up with whatever is vibrating at the same frequency that we are emitting. Anything higher has to pass above us, and anything lower will go beneath us. And so in the same way, you know, if you, during those days, we had televisions that had a dial on them. If you turn on the TV and turn the dial and didn't get it exactly on the station, you'd get a lot of static. And the view would not be clear, the sound would be static, but the view would be fuzzy. That's a good analogy for life. If you're getting a lot of static in your life, if things are not looking clear to you, that you are getting, there's a law of radiance here. There's a law of reciprocity. There's laws of circulation. These are universal laws, and the law is no respecter of person. The fact that you don't know the law doesn't limit it at all. It is precise and exact. And just like the seed, the stall, and the plant, when you put the seed into fertile soil, it must manifest after its own kind. Potato seeds get potatoes, and tomato seeds get tomatoes. And so the analogy here, as the master teacher taught us, the analogy is your thoughts are your seeds. And so when you're seeing a lot of, when you're hearing a lot of static and seeing a lot of fuzzy stuff going on in your life, then you know what seed has been sown. Is one that the wolf that I mentioned earlier, you're on the wrong side of the law. And so you could be considered an outlaw. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a guide for you to understand where you are. If you were going to, from Las Vegas, the analogy that I use is to go to L.A., which I often do, and we'll be going there from next week in a few days. If you were driving from Las Vegas to L.A., that 290-some miles, halfway mark is Barstow. That's the intention. But I'm driving, and I look up, and I see a sign that says Mesquite. Then what's happening here? I'm going the wrong direction. if I want to get to L.A., then I'm going to have to make a U-turn and go back in the direction. Of course, it will have taken some time, but it's still better than continuing on a path that I know is leading me away from the desire of my heart, whatever it is. And so the same thing is true for us spiritually. That's all it is. When you do an assessment of the garden of your life and you see a lot of weeds, or you find that you're having whatever it is that you have, whether it's indigestion, whether it's headaches, too much bump at the end of your money, nobody wants to spend time with you because you're lost in the stories that you tell repeatedly, whatever it is, then in this assessment period of seeing the way you look at things, to do a purification process, to simply get out of the way, recognizing that since it's done unto you as you believe, when you change the belief, you change the things that are happening to you and from you. And we can help you with that in Beauty Shop for the Soul. So if you want to explore this possibility, we're here every Sunday afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And, of course, you can push number 1 and ask a question, share an experience. I'd love to talk to you, and I'm sure that there are others that may want to hear whatever it is that you may want to share. And so in the meantime, one of the suggestions or recommendations that I have is for you to journal. First, just gratitude. 5 times a day. Not 5 times a day, 5 things a day is what I want to say. 5 things a day. That if you, because it's the energy of gratitude that's going to shift the vibrations that you're radiating out from you. So I see that somebody has pushed the number 1, and I recognize that area code. Let me just, hello? Huh. Area code 208.
Yes,
hello?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you now. Thank you.
Okay.
And I know who you are, so would you tell your first name, the other listener?
Yes, this is Teresa, and I'm in Moscow, Idaho.
Okay. So what's up for you today, Teresa? What would you like to share or comment on or ask about?
Well, it's very grateful for your orientation today because it was very spot on. I have been making some big decisions about, you know, how I'm going to be taking care of my properties and sort of coming from a unsettled and not harmonious kind of atmosphere with my fellow human beings. And the shift, doing the shift in energy was, you know, like coming into where is this coming from? You know, where is this tension coming from? It's like the like a cultural thing or a historical thing, or from my relationship with my dad and things like that. That it really wasn't me. It was, you know, that other, and like relinquishing my attachment to that. To free up my own personal, like, where am I right now? I'm in a beautiful house, having beautiful snow falling, and with, you know, a pleasant atmosphere and dog and people, and, you know, everything that I'm living is beautiful. And I was aware that I was, like, not fully present with it. Not appreciating that all that was going on, because I had my mind off in some other, you know, state of ease. You know, it was kind of awesome. Thank you.
Okay, so I have a question for you. You mentioned the dis-ease that you were experiencing, and the energy shift, And then you said it wasn't you. And so talk a little bit more about that for me, please.
Well, I think we bring sort of mind patterns and thoughts and emotional reactions to things from past experiences, like not even consciously, you know, from things that you're sort of brought up in an atmosphere of somebody who's worried about finances all the time, that you tend to worry.
So what would be your opportunity in that relationship? Because what has happened, I'm hearing you say that you're enjoying the experience that you're now having, but what has happened is that we accumulate energy over all the years that we are not aware of the choices that are available to us. And so at some point, if something happens, it's like post-traumatic stress syndrome. And then it seems
yeah.
that something is happening just right out of the blue if we are not aware of it. So in this purification
yeah.
process, then we get to clear out all this concealed energy there. So can you talk about how you're doing that or how you did that?
I think it was just bringing it into consciousness, becoming aware that I was not being fully present in my life, doing it from me, you know, just how I am and how I feel. I am, and what you were just saying about the gratitude thing, it's like I just stepped into being so appreciative of where I am really, you know, and who I am and who's with me and what my circumstances are, that I'm so fortunate and so blessed.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, I don't think I have time to tell a story about gratitude, but I will see how far it goes because it's almost time. We're not going to have the time. But a simple shift in gratitude, and gratitude does not have to be, I will close with this, it does not have to be about the issue at hand. For example, if it's your health that is a challenge for you, obviously you can be thankful that you woke up this morning, that you have arms and feet and legs and all these things, but you could have gratitude that the sun is shining, that you live in a wonderful place. It's just the energy itself of gratitude around us. And so as we go through this week, I invite you all to every day write down, not just think about, five things that you have to be grateful for. Don't try it. Even if it's just one thing written five times, what you're wanting to do is change your focus of attention from what is undesired to what is desired. And it will happen as you begin to become aware of what is it that you are married to, what thoughts, what idea, what belief that does not serve you. And so it's a time to sign off here, and I'm inviting you to have a wonderful, marvelous, magnificent week. I will look to hear from you next week. Thank you, Teresa. Take care, everybody.
Oh, good night. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Beauty Shop for the Soul with host Joanne Buckner, here on Earth Angels Radio. For more information on Joanne, please visit earthangelsradio.com. You can also contact Joanne by email at ourbeautifulsouls@gmail.com or call her at 702-622-4937. What better way to transform than a day at the beauty shop? Beauty Shop for the Soul.
Find out how you can proud to celebrate Black History Month by supporting those making a difference in their community. When Carl Lewis, who had 8.5 years in the long jump at the 1996 Olympic Games in Atlanta, he won his 9th gold medal, and at that time became the most successful Olympian in history. As a track and field athlete, Lewis dominated the 100 meters, 200 meters, and long jump for over a decade, and was named Sportsman of the Century by the International Olympic Committee. He also won 10 World Championship medals, smashing numerous world records along the way.
I always wanted to be a star, and I wanted to be famous, and I wanted to be wealthy, and I wanted to lead the world. I wanted all of it. I wanted everything. And I realized I couldn't just be anyone and be a star. I had to actually work at that part of it and treat my sport like a business and my career. And that means put the career first, put the training first, with the, you know, get the best coaches, the best trainers, everything I could do, and then go out and try to be the best that I could be.
Carl Lewis first began to emerge as a dominant sprinter in 1981 as a member of the Santa Monica Track Club, and went on to win 3 golds at the Helsinki World Championships. But it was his performance at the 1984 Olympics in Los Angeles that catapulted him to world fame. He was determined to equal Jesse Owens' record of 4 gold medals in one game, and accomplished this by winning his 4th gold while anchoring the victorious U.S. 4x100 meter relay team. The Los Angeles Olympics was Lewis's greatest success, but the 1988 Olympics in Seoul was his most testing time when he lined up against Canadian sprinter Ben Johnson in the hotly anticipated 100-meter final.
Number 159, the world champion and world record holder, Ben Johnson, Canada.
Carl Lewis came into success, but within days, Johnson failed a drug test, and Lewis was awarded the gold. The impact Lewis had on track and field can still be felt today. He helped transform it from an amateur event to a professional status, giving athletes more lucrative endorsements and longer careers. In 1999, Lewis was named Olympian of the Century by Sports Illustrated magazine and became an ambassador for the United Nations. Carl Lewis is making history happen. You can too. See how others are making a difference in their community and support them through the 8/16/28 Days Making History Happen Challenge. Track their progress and share their stories at 8/16.com/28 Days. AT&T 28 Days is proud to open a world of new possibilities for the next generation. This Black History Month, we encourage you to share your ideas for a better tomorrow. Take advantage to join us in making a difference. AT&T, we think possible. Thank you.